It's true that the eyes are the windows to the soul, and many are aware also they are a window to the gut. Not as romantic, it's noted. Board-certified integrative health practitioner Alicia Rocco can read eyes, and since learning from the master Dr. Bernard Jensen years ago, is herself a master in iridology. We can all benefit from being reminded about intestinal health and ways to achieve it. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Alicia, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Now, can you give a brief 101 on iridology and then jump right into what you see as evidence of either colon health or disease in the body?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Iridology came to this country through Dr. Bernard Jensen, who brought it here from Europe. There have been many teachers in iridology in European in the past 100 or so years, and Dr. Jensen brought it here, and he wanted to get it into layman's terms so that it could be brought here and we could all understand how to use it as an analyzing tool here in this country. In Europe, they do use it as a diagnostic tool, but here in this country, we're only permitted to use it to analyze, to really show the genetics of what's really going on. So what iridology can do for you with just a small light and a magnifier, you can actually look into the iris of the eye, which is an imprint, very much like your thumb. And what it can tell you is the genetic potential that you have for particular illnesses or diseases. Now, it doesn't say you have it. It just says potential for. So we need to be very clear about that. There are a lot of other testing that you could do in adjunct to that to discover what's going on actually in your body. So the colors and the markings in the eye are like a little map, and they map out internally what is going on in the body, in the different systems of the body. Dr. Jensen's very first iridology chart was mapped out exactly that way. And since then, his daughter-in-law has also taken it a step further, Dr. Ellen Jensen, and she has updated the map. And it's a very wonderful tool for all of the iridologists that use it in our country. In the past, I've done a lot of instructing in iridology and still continue to do that today and do classes in teaching and have people come from all over the world to learn how to do the iridology. Now, when you look in the very center of your eye where the pupil is, and you look at the very outskirts of that, there's what they call a nutritive zone. So this is where your digestive and your intestinal tract would show up in the iris of the eye. And sometimes if you look at a blue-eyed person, you'll see the center of that is somewhat dark in color. It could be like a soft brown color. People will ask, well, why is that like that? And the reason is because this is an area that you hold a lot of toxicity, and this is in your nutritive zone or your digestive and colon area. So it's really noticeable in a blue-eyed person. It's not as noticeable in a very dark brown-eyed person. And by the way, there are three colors of eyes. There's the blue, which is lymphatic. There's the soft brown or tan color, which is biliary. And then there is the dark velvety brown color, which is hematogenic. And each of them, just by color alone, can tell you something. Blue-eyed people tend to be more lymphatic, respiratory, urinary type genetics. The biliary eye tends to be a little more digestive, intestinal genetics. And the hematogenic or the dark brown, velvety brown eye tends to be more blood anomalies in their genetics.
So when you're saying that someone is lymphatic genetic, you mean that might be where their weaknesses lie?
That's correct. But what you have to always know is even though by looking at that color, you look in that nutritive zone where the digestive and the intestinal and the bowel is, that you're going to find if there are discolorations in those areas and markings in those areas, that also tells you the level of health of that digestive system. And, of course, you know, that's our first system. This is where our food goes in, and this is where everything starts, whether it be physically or emotionally. This is where it all begins. So it tells us right up front in iridology what the genetic possibilities are for you having intestinal and or digestive problems. So that's the first key of defense when we're working with anything in preventative health care. So that's how we move to a space where Dr. Jensen was always very clear about you digest, you assimilate, you absorb, and you eliminate. There's always a waste byproduct. And so we have followed suit with that, and in part of doing that, of course, I've helped in creating some internal cleansing kits so that we can start to move some of those toxic waste through. And I think there was a time eons ago when we were very healthy eaters. Today, many people are fast-paced eaters. They eat in the car. They eat on the run.
Yes, and it's certainly a combination of the actual food we are intaking as well as not being very physically active. I think
that's
the two
correct.
Definitely go hand in hand.
Right. So our whole world is set up differently in the way in which we're taking things in and taking things out of the body. So we have to really look at that, and we've actually created internal cleansing kits to help us just as another tool to help move things through. It's sort of like, you know, my grandma used to clean the house in the spring and in the fall every year, and most assuredly she always created us a spring tonic from the herbal remedies, and we got our cleansing too.
That's so great. Alicia, I do want to focus our talk today on the colon cleansing and on herbs, and your bio was so lengthy I didn't even mention that you are indeed an herbalist, and you just mentioned that you have helped prepare certain recipes, so to speak, for internal cleansings. And I guess one of the reasons why I was attracted to have you on the show was that you have a history of working with Dr. Bernard Jensen and also working with a specific herb company for 30 years. So that in itself says a lot to me.
Sure. One of the things that we have done in the past is we've searched out herbal companies that would be on the same page as us, so to speak. And a number of years ago, I was traveling around trying to find an herb company that would be willing to put together a whole body internal cleansing kit for me, so that I could start to teach people how to do thorough cleansings, especially in the spring and in the fall. And I was able to find the company named Blessed Herbs in Massachusetts, and they worked very diligently with me, and we created a whole-body internal cleansing kit, as well as we also used in that kit the colon kit by itself and the parasite kit by itself, and to do extra cleaning, so to speak, when someone is having a crisis of some kind and they need to work more diligently on the bowel or on parasites. So those kits have all been tested and tried. We did them here in our center for a number of years before they were put out on the market, and we've been very pleased with how they've come about. Martha there is a wonderful herbalist. I let her create the formulas because that's her expertise, and she knows that well. And she in turn let me create the way in which it could be packaged and put together because I am the practitioner, and I recognize what needs to be done first, second, and third.
Now, what herbs do you use to clean the colon?
Well, we use a number of herbs. What you're going to find is most of the herbs used are bitters. They're things like burdock root, cascara. Those are the kinds of, and most of the time, those are going to be in a encapsulated form because of the fact that there's no way anyone would ever take them otherwise. Some of the parasite herbs now we would use that are in the parasite cleanses are also bitters, but some of those we can put into a liquid form because they have a more palatable taste. So we use a lot of Western herbs, and once in a while you're going to find that you'll find herbs from out of the country as well that might be from the rainforest or places like that that we use.
It seems like places like India and South America would not only have the herbs but also be well-versed in using herbs for various parasite cleanses because it seems... I mean, I don't know if it's more of a problem in those areas, but it certainly seems like they're more savvy to it. I mean,
well,
people, I think.
Absolutely, in South America. What happens a lot of times, people here in the U.S. will travel to those countries and they'll come back and they've picked up a parasite and they've had a lot of trouble getting rid of it. They'll begin to lose a lot of weight, and a lot of times the medical professional won't know what to do with it and so forth. People down there can eat that same exact food, and again, one more time, that's native to their country, so it doesn't affect them the same way. But they'll come back, you know, U.S. people will come back here, and it will definitely affect them, and they will definitely need to be doing some parasite cleansings. And we find this a lot of times with traveling. When people do a lot of traveling, they'll come back, and the first thing they'll want to do is do our kits, because they'll say, oh, my gosh, I just feel awful. The different foods and so forth, they probably picked up parasites along the way.
Well, I know even with a lot of the... There are places in the U.S. where you can send stool samples, and I believe there are a couple of places now in the U.S. that are very thorough, but it took a long time for those to crop up because it seemed like the testing in the U.S. even was not that thorough enough to really catch what was going on, hence what you just described as the doctors sort of throwing up their hands, not knowing quite what to do because nothing would show up.
Well, and you have to remember, a lot of the testing previously done up until now has just been stool testing. And what they didn't understand was that parasites can also live in the blood. And so,
right.
You know, they weren't testing for parasites as much in the blood. There are some different kinds of parasites that also can burrow into tissue and create nests. And these were other things that there's no way they would ever see or know. So that's part of it. I mean, it sounds a little gross, and sometimes people
creepy.
Get very upset listening to that. But the whole key behind it is that you have to understand there are parasites that live on you and in you daily. It's the overabundance of them. You're no different than the animals that we, you know, we have our little pets, and we deworm them.
Certainly.
It's not much different.
Right. And I know that in the spring, for instance, if we really observed the animals out in the wild to see what they're eating, that naturally helps to take care of things like that.
That's correct. That's correct. That's exactly right. And, you know, we have a tendency to try to treat the parasites with a lot of medications. Sometimes medications will actually hurt the immune system of the animal or person. And then in that case, then if you don't have the immune system to fight back, then the parasites, that's a host for them to live and multiply that much more.
Right. One thing I noticed when I was actually doing the colon cleanse was it really made my body more alkaline, which is a basic place we need to start, as well as a basic colon cleanse also.
That's correct.
Now, in the past, when I've been working with people, we would sort of go alphabetical, colon, kidney, liver, as far as the order of cleanse. Does that make any sense to you, or
yes,
how do you work?
We created ours to start with the digestive tract first, and then it went into the liver and the bowel, and along with that, we were killing off yeast and parasites. From there, then we would go into the urinary and the respiratory systems, and then last but not least, the blood and the lymphatic system was last in that.
Yeah. Now, there's some controversy, obviously, there usually is with anything, but it's controversial as far as the stool that people start having while they are on an intense colon cleanse, like something that the herbs that you have with Blessed Herbs, and the gastro doctors say, oh, this, there's never any buildup like this on the walls, whereas the people that are advocates of colon cleanses say what's being drawn out of the body is what has been attached to the walls inside the intestine and colon. And I'm wondering if you could sort of give us a both sides version.
Sure, absolutely. the one thing you have to remember is what you're cleaning out in the colon cleansing kit is the small intestinal tract and the bowel. A lot of times when we do enemas or colon therapy, we're just working on the lower bowel. In the small intestinal, there is a mucosal lining, and that mucosal lining is what you're working toward cleansing. And when it's like any other mucus, when it hardens up, it kind of gets plaquey-like. And that happens when a lot of the eating goes on and you have a lot of undigested food and it lies in the intestinal tract for a long period of time. The small intestinal tract is where you absorb your nutrient back into your bloodstream and into your body. So if this mucosal lining becomes sort of plaque or hardened-like, you have no absorption rate. You have no way for it to get back in there. So eventually what has to, whatever may have been good, may be coming out the other way. Part of the reason for the colon cleansing was to help remove some of that plaque. Now, there's a pro-con issue here. You do have a fiber formula, which we call the toxin absorber in the kit, and it is actually has fiber. So we've had those who have said, well, isn't this just all the fiber coming out in this plaque-like lining that comes out during the cleansing? I would say there is some of that coming out, yes, but I would say not all of it. We've had people call and ask us, well, I did this 5-day colon fasting, and I didn't get any of that plaque. And I will start to ask them, how do you eat? What do you eat? What's your diet like, et cetera, so forth. And it's pretty amazing. Sometimes they're very healthy eaters. Other times I've talked to them, and they go, oh, well, you know, I've ate fried foods and junk food all my life, you know, and I didn't get anything like that. So I'll ask them, I'll say, well, okay, let's give the body a rest and let's do it again. And sometimes the second or the third time they'll find the plaque will come out, especially if they've been very bad eaters. But you're still, again, there's all that controversy that says, is this just all the fiber coming out or is there truly plaque in the small intestinal? Anyone who knows, mucus will harden and it can become very plaque or pasty-like. And that's what Dr. Jensen used to talk about when he talked about the catarrh that he had in it looked like a black-like lining when he would do a lot of cleansings of people on his ranch. And they would get strings and strings of this out through cleansing, and then they would start to get well. So now, we know there's something to it. Now, without an autopsy, I don't know how we're ever going to prove this. Be really honest with you.
Right. And the controversy continues because I've heard of the same doctors, you know, they'll have an autopsy and they'll say, look, there's nothing like this buildup in the body. Mm-hmm. So
to me, with an autopsy, I don't think you're going to prove it either, because as with anything that is moist or mucousy or has any kind of consistency to it, there has to be heat in the body, and so therefore, if you have a dead body, so to speak, you have a cold body, and so that is already hardened and absorbed back into the system.
Of course.
I'm not so sure you can prove it.
Right. I mean, this is way off the subject, but have you ever, like, looked into the eyes of dead people?
Yes, we have. Yes.
I don't mean to get morbid here, but...
It's very interesting because if everyone knows that the eyes are mostly water, and so they're some of the very first organs that are harvested if you are an organ donor. And so, therefore, you have to quickly do that. And one of the things that happens is that the iris turns a dark color, and it's very hard to see anything that you saw before while it was alive because it's all water. It's almost like looking into a dark pool. And so it's very hard.
Have you been able to ever see the eye when it's just been removed and then it's placed in someone else's body? And like, how long would it take to start showing the condition of that new body?
It never does. Believe it or not, it will only show the condition of the previous body that it was in.
Wow. That's,
yeah, it's very interesting.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way that the iris actually changes. The iris is your imprint. It's just like your thumb. If someone took your thumb off and put it on someone else's thumb, it would still have that imprint.
Oh, very interesting. Well, since you do the iridology and you do the colon health cleansing, can you give us an example of a transformation that you've seen?
Well, I can, and I think mostly most people that do our cleansing process that we have here on a very regular basis, all of our clients that come in to purchase it, I remember one older lady, she was in her 70s, and she said she had a lot of itching and scratching all the time, felt like things were crawling under her skin, and we were thoroughly aware that she probably had parasites. We were almost sure of that. after about two or three cleansings, she came in and she was just so thrilled. Her skin was so luscious in color, she said, and it was so soft and beautiful. And, you know, mind you, she's in her 70s, and she had taken really good care of herself, but she had traveled a lot throughout the years. And during that time of cleansing, she had expelled a number of parasites and worms, so to speak, which is nice and not gross to talk about. But and she said that she realizes now that they had been a part of her system for a lot of years and had been a part of a lot of her health problems. She was much healthier after about 2 years. And she was just like amazing talk show for us. She would go around telling everyone how wonderful it was.
And then what did you see shift in her eyes?
In her eyes, what you're going to notice is not so much in the iris color, but you're going to notice in the sclera part. In the sclera is the white part of the eyes. All those red lines that you see, those all say something to you. And the depth of the redness in those lines and with the direction they're going and what they look like say something to you. And in her particular case, she had said she had used eye medications all the time to try to get rid of the red lines. After we cleansed her all up, they were starting to disappear because that's exactly what happens. The sclera tells you what's going on inside the body now. So if you start to clean it up, which is what we did with her, kill off a lot of the parasites and so forth that she had, brought her body back into a homeostasis or a balance, these red lines start disappearing. And she said she didn't have to use her eye medication anymore. And I said, well, the only thing you were doing with your eye medication was covering it up, whether you realized it or not. The red lines were telling you what was happening inside your body, and now that that's all cleaned up, it's not there anymore. Mm. So the iris part doesn't change. Remember that. It's like your thumbprint. It won't change the colors and the markings that are in there. The only thing the iris part will do is lighten up in color. So if, let's say, you have sort of a grayish-green color eye, it might come back and you'll see patches of blue come back up through it as you start to clean it up. So it'll lighten in color, not change color, but lighten in color as you clean the body up.
But don't, I mean, as someone ages, for instance, don't, you know, you see in some people's eyes, they'll have little black or brown dots, for instance, in the iris of the eye. And don't those go away with cleansing?
Those are pigmentations, and they don't go away with cleansing, but they'll lighten up. I have seen those pigmentations come on when there's been a lot of medication use, but they usually never disappear. They just lighten up is all they do.
I see. Now, what about the question of salt depletion? I've heard that is an issue when doing a colon cleanse.
Salt depletion?
Yes.
We haven't had any problems with that, to be really honest with you. We walk all of our people through the cleanses, and we're here for them with their questions and so forth as we do it. So, you know, and I'm very aware of what's going on, but we've never had any problems with that.
Because I had just heard that using various detoxifiers, they will sometimes draw, there was a question about them drawing out salts and various minerals from the colon.
Well, I think because of the different, we have like 13 products in our kit, and we probably have over 100 and some different herbs in there, and you have to understand that probably most of them are doing a balancing act no matter what we're doing in the cleansing process. I'm not saying that there are not products on the market that may not cause that. That's possible.
I see. Now, it seems like the master, I'm sure you're aware of the master cleanse that,
yes.
Maybe you could just let our listeners know what it is in case they don't know, because it seems that there's quite a surge right now with the Master Cleanse becoming in vogue again.
Hmm.
And I'm wondering what your opinion is of the Master Cleanse. And just for people that don't know what it is, maybe you could say what it is.
Well, I'm not real familiar with it, except for clients that I know that have used it, because we use the Blessed Herbs Cleanse here. And so at this particular point, I don't know that I could actually speak on whether or not it's good, bad, or indifferent, you know.
I see. Yeah, I know one, I think it's lemon and water and maple syrup and cayenne. And it also has you do a certain amount of salt in the water in the morning when you just drink some salt and water to clean out the colon every day while you're on the cleanse.
I'm cautious of some of those ingredients, mainly because We work for here with blood typing. A lot of times people with certain blood types, those would not be good ingredients for them. Even with the cleanses that we do here from Blessed Herbs, I am aware of some things that I may have them do or not do that are in the kits because of the particular blood type that they are, because I could see how that could draw the salt out of the blood.
Right. Now, with the colon cleanse, for instance, it's recommended that you do a five-day fast with this one in particular from Blessed Herbs. And so because of two things, one, some people just don't have the willpower, so to speak, or the desire to do a fast. And many people don't really have the ability to purchase a colon cleanse. And I'm wondering if you could speak a couple of moments on colon health. Say if someone, you know, they're not going to go out and get a cleanse, they're not going to have the willpower to do a fast. What do you recommend for that type of person?
Well, and I know the medical profession would, this is one thing we probably would both agree upon, is fiber. It's most important that people have a daily intake of fiber. Now, a lot of your vegetables are fibrous, so it's not that you have to take a fiber drink, although many people prefer to do a fiber drink to be absolutely sure they're getting the fiber that they need. Colon health is, here's some rules. One, for every full meal that you have, you should have a bowel movement. There should be a process of elimination for every waste byproduct from that particular meal. Now, I'm talking a full meal. Some folks eat three meals a day. Some folks only eat two. In the past, the medical profession has said, oh, whatever's right for you is right. That's not the case. You digest, you assimilate, you absorb, and you eliminate. There is a waste byproduct. So your full breakfast that you had this morning, you should be excreting the waste byproduct from that breakfast by tomorrow morning. There should be an 18 to 24-hour transit time. If that's not going on, you need to be taking in some fiber, and it, whether it be a fiber drink from an herbal company, however you want to see that, or whether you want to do it in foods nutritionally, that needs to be increased. The other thing that I find with colon health is water intake, good water intake. Many people become dehydrated, they become constipated, and when they do have a bowel movement, it's very dry and hardened. Most of that's because there's not enough water intake. So two things, water, fiber, bowel movements for every full meal should be a transit time of 18 to 24 hours. And folks who are saying to me, I only have a bowel movement once every 3 days or once every 5 days, you're going to be in trouble before long.
Right. Now, and in saying that people don't have willpower for fasting, certainly I don't know what the percentage would be, but my guess would be it's very high, that people are overeating, and it doesn't hurt to give your digestive system a rest every
Absolutely.
Now and then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually in India, their rule is you cup your hands together, and what you can put in your hands is what you should be eating in a meal. Now, if you can get a steak and a big potato and that big salad and your dessert on top of that all in your little hands, great. But I just don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. Well, I might try that sometime.
Yeah. Here in the U.S., we overeat. We are a very wealthy country, and so therefore we tend to feel we have to have that.
Master Iridologist Alicia Rocco, for any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.